welcome back to the Royal Studies Network podcast series. Today is a great example of our new directions initiative in which we're interviewing researchers who are kind of at the cutting edge of the field of royal studies and who are bringing out new projects, new research, new kind of initiatives, new research hubs. So we've got lots of great things that are kind of falling under this new directions umbrella. Today, we're going to be talking to Dr. Helen Newsom, who has a hot new project that we're going to hear all about in this episode. So first, let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Newsom. So she's a postdoctoral researcher at the Aston Institute for Forensic Linguistics. She's currently looking at linguistic performances of power and persuasion in online criminal interactions. So in addition to the work that she does in forensic linguistics, she also does interdisciplinary analysis of historical text. So she brings these theories and methods from historical linguistics, bringing it together with manuscript studies, obviously queenship studies, which we'll be hearing more about, medieval and early modern literature, and digital humanities. So it's a heady mix. And we'll be talking more about this kind of interdisciplinary focus that's also kind of hallmark of the project that she's working on at the moment. So previously, she was a postdoctoral research fellow for the Society of Renaissance Studies. And while she was doing that postdoc, she was working on an edition of the holograph correspondence of Margaret Tudor. And we'll be hearing more about that as well. Very, very exciting. Now, Margaret Tudor was also the subject of her PhD, which she completed at Sheffield in 2019. So her thesis was she that should be mediatress in thy matters, performance of mediation in the letters of Margaret Tudor. And that was funded by the AHRC. So lots of exciting stuff coming out from that work. You may have already clocked some of her publications, a great article in Renaissance Studies, The Function, Format, and Performance of Margaret Tudor's January 1522 Diplomatic Memorial. Or again, there's also a piece in Notes and Queries, Reconsidering the Provenance of Henry VII and Margaret Tudor's Book of Hours. So there's lots of great stuff that you can, if you're interested in Margaret Tudor, all sorts of great stuff coming out. We'll be hearing more about Margaret, I'm sure, over this episode. So this project that we're keen to highlight that Helen's recently received funding for is called The Queen's Post. I love the title, by the way, that's fantastic. So it's about the form, function, and power of early Tudor Queen's correspondence. Now, of course, Tudors and Queens, again, it's a fantastic mix. We know there's a lot of people who absolutely love the Tudors, particularly the women. So obviously some great focus there. So the project looks at the form, function, and power of these women's correspondence. It looks at the letters of 9 Tudor queens. So basically going from Elizabeth of York all the way through to Catherine Parr, and including Elizabeth's daughters, Margaret Tudor, who we've been talking about, and Mary Tudor Brandon, once Queen of France, and later obviously returned back to England to marry Charles Brandon and had a kind of second career there. So we've got a really fantastic mix of not only queens of England, but women who were queens in Scotland and France, and again, I've had this really interesting and diverse situation. We've got women who were born into royalty and women who were elevated into it as well. We've got kind of foreigners and native queens. So lots of exciting women to kind of look at there. So in addition to this heady mix of women, again, we've got this fantastic interdisciplinary look at this correspondence. So Helen's bringing together the methods from linguistics, which her background is, also literary studies, archival studies, material culture. We've got gender studies, queenship studies, and diplomatic history. So all of those kind of lenses are informing the work here. So lots of exciting stuff going on. So we're really excited to hear more about the Queen's Post and everything that you're up to. So let's start with this project. Congratulations. So exciting to get funding for this. So tell me a bit more about how it got started or kind of what inspired you to kind of put this project together.
Yeah, so it all kind of stems from the Queen herself, Margaret. Margaret Tudor. So when I was doing my PhD on Margaret's letters, I found that there was a substantial lack of any kind of large-scale study on what Tudor Queen's correspondence looks like as a genre of writing. So there's been work on the letters of Elizabeth I. So some of the work by Rayne Allanson, for example, Mel Evans has looked at her linguistic practices. And then you've got people like Guillaume Cotelin, Jonathan Gibson, Carla Bayetta, who've looked at her foreign correspondence. So there's been like studies of Elizabeth I, and there's been a little bit of work by Evan Sadlack on Mary Tudor Brandon's correspondence from a literary kind of historical perspective, and some work done by Mel Evans more recently, who's also a linguist, on Tudor kings and queens writing, but kind of regnant monarchs, really focusing on those and kind of the most formal positions of power. And those were the only kinds of real studies that I could draw upon in trying to understand what Margaret was doing in her letters. You know, how did her linguistic and material practices kind of compare to those of her contemporaries? And actually, it's really difficult to compare a queen consort or queen regent, queen dowager, with a regnant queen or a king, like, because they're doing quite different, they hold different levels of power and kind of formal responsibility, and they do completely different things in their correspondence to some extent. So how can you compare Margaret with just Elizabeth I? And I was kind of like, well, I was sort of operating in a bit of a vacuum, really. And I was like, you know, there's a real need for me to see what other queens are doing, you know, and to have like an overarching view of, you know, what does Catherine of Aragon do? How does Margaret compare to the practices of her mother, for example? You know, where might she draw upon from, you know, how does she do something different or something similar to those contemporaries around her who are in similar kind of social, sociolinguistic positions? So that's kind of where it came from, was just like, I was aware of the complete absence of any kind of wider information of what other queens do in letter writing, linguistically, materially, as well as kind of the form and function of their letters. So it really came from like that initial like exploration to go, oh God, what do I use as the backbone and the wider context of what I'm doing? And that just really kind of shone the light that in order to really understand one individual, you need to understand what the wider network are doing. So that's kind of where it came from. It was, yeah, Margaret being the unusual woman that she was, and kind of just she inspired and really kind of highlighted that there's a lack of scholarship in this area. That was the point. I kind of thought, well, this is a bit of a research potential, isn't it? So yeah, Margaret, she inspired it, standard.
Well, yeah, it's like I said, given your work on Margaret, I'm not surprised that she was at the heart of this. Yeah, no, fantastic. I mean, clearly plugging a massive kind of gap in the field. So this is really, really exciting. Now, obviously, following up on Margaret, I know that you have been working on her. I know that you've been working on this fantastic edition of her holograph correspondence. So can you tell us a bit about that edition of her letters that you're working on and kind of the connection between that and this current project that you're doing?
So they are quite distinct, I guess that's the point. And the edition of Margaret's holograph letters is transcriptions and an introduction that other scholars can use. And it kind of draws upon the research and understandings that I've developed through my PhD and kind of the last couple of years of research, trying to understand why Margaret wrote and how she wrote and what survives and what doesn't, and what the letters can tell us about different kind of aspects of her queenship and of her life. So it's really kind of drawing together a resource for other scholars. Whereas the new project, it will draw upon those transcriptions and that preliminary research, but it's really doing something kind of completely different in its scope and trying, instead of looking at an individual, it's going for the kind of the macro, looking at the genre of Queen's writing as a whole across this period. So I'll use some of the research in the edition, but the scope of this project is very much, it's very much focused by the leading questions of what do these women do through letters and how do they do it, and what can that that analysis of their language, of their material practices, of how they use messengers can tell us, and kind of reconsider their role in politics and diplomacy of the past. And that's something that's really kind of come to light with my work on Margaret Tudor's letters. She's previously been really kind of dismissed in studies of Anglo-Scots politics and diplomacy. And looking at her letters through my PhD, I kind of realised that she's actually far more important than we've necessarily given her credit for. And that's kind of the same focus that I'm wanting to take for the larger project, to thinking of kind of reconsidering potentially the role that these queens who were very well known, well, actually, can we consider them in a more serious light in terms of their role that they played through letter writing in politics and diplomacy? And also potentially kind of shining new lights on these individuals, because you think of Anne Boleyn and she's so incredibly iconic. Well, actually, what can we say about what she does through letter writing, and maybe how that offers a new comparison of her queenship in comparison to like Catherine of Aragon or something like that? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, I mean, it sounds like they're completely complementary. Like you said, you've got the micro and the macro, you've got the really intensive exploration of one individual's correspondence and kind of the unpicking of it versus this kind of comparative dimension that really shines a light on kind of queenship and kind of how that operates, if you like, through the medium of letters. So exciting. Like I said, both of these projects I'm super, super excited about. Fantastic stuff. So again, another thing I'm really excited about, as I mentioned in the introduction, is this interdisciplinary element. It's really exciting, this idea of historic and forensic linguistics and bringing that to queenship studies. Now, this is really exciting because, you know, queenship and royal studies is all about the interdisciplinary, but this combination is really different. I mean, obviously we get a lot of historians and art historians, et cetera, kind of bringing, you know, archaeologists, et cetera, kind of bringing their lens to queenship studies. Yeah. But historic and forensic linguistics is not something that we see all the time. So how does this kind of approach bring like a different perspective on queenship than maybe a historian or an art historian might have, for example?
So I think it just gives us tools and ways of understanding how queens try to persuade their recipients, what kinds of ways in which they're a bit like you talked about at the beginning, the ways in which their social and geographical background and the political position they fulfill and the educations they have of mapping those different dynamics or kind of variables on a linguistic level. So how can we kind of map the kind of things that we'd be considering in historical studies or in literary studies, for example, but how can we map them kind of on a different dimension and what impact can they have linguistically? And I think historical linguistics and forensic analysis can kind of show practically how that's happening through the language that we're using and the role that language can play in identity construction and kind of through the exertion of power of these women. So you can look at, for example, I'm really interested to see if there's any kind of like macro practices to see if the queens kind of have a general kind of, if there's general trends of writing you can see in the letters, but also you can see when they potentially flout these general practices and what they're doing through that. So if Catherine of Aragon chooses to use a different kind of language than she would in her letters to Henry VIII, well, what does that tell us? Is she trying to be impolite? Is she trying to kind of exert a different kind of power than she might do otherwise? So it's kind of a way of just looking at the same factors that we'd look at in like manuscript studies or from material culture perspectives, but in the linguistic level.
Yeah, I think it got really kind of unpicking the word choice, the construction, to dig into. These are really rich sources. I mean, letters, again, you know, I think it's been something that's been a real hallmark of research in recent years, is a real kind of focus on letters. Yeah. I mean, I know, you know, Emlo and Wemlo are absolutely fantastic resources that, you know, many of us use. Obviously, James Daybell's done some amazing work on letters and early modern women. Nadine Ackerman, I mean, her studies of Elizabeth of Bohemia or the Winter Queen's correspondence, obviously massive. And I think she's doing this Feathers project now, which again, really exciting. And I know there's this other project called Tudor Networks of Power, and they've been doing like a data visualization, which is really, really exciting as well. So that's like the kind of social network theory in letters and all sorts of. So there's so many different things that we can do with letters and different, different pockets of correspondence that have been really richly explored. So in terms of thinking about these women, these different women that you're looking at, are you going to be doing any kind of mapping or any kind of visual element with it, or again, a database, or how is it going to be kind of brought together?
Kind of multiple ways, and they're all kind of in their inception at the moment. So I'm not going to step on the toes of people like Sebastian and Ruth Annett's work on the network, Tudor Networks of Power, because they really, I mean, they're doing the macro stuff. I'm interested more on the kind of, again, a kind of smaller level. So interested in mapping who these women write to, when, where, and how. So we can kind of build up a little bit of a network and see if there's any similarities between different correspondents. So, you know, who does Margaret write to versus Mary Tudor Brandon, and what does that tell us about kind of Henry VIII's power and administrative kind of setup. So there'll be that kind of lower level network analysis, but not kind of social network analysis, if that makes sense, because I'm just going to draw on the expertise of the Tudor Networks of Power project. I would like to maybe do some kind of visualizations in one of the outputs of the project. So I'm going to have like a website, which is kind of going to serve as the project's kind of platform. And the idea of that is it's going to have almost like a database, like a hand list of all of these Queen's letters that I've found thus far, include so that people can use it as a resource. So they can go, okay, what survives and where can I find it and who wrote to who and when. And it's also going to include transcriptions, hopefully diplomatic and probably modernized as well, because that's something I could do quite easily. And accompanied material descriptions and images where possible, depending on permissions, etc. So the idea is to kind of create like a resource for other scholars to be able to use like the outputs of what I've developed during the project. And maybe as part of that, I might do some kinds of visualizations, but I mean, it's not going to be, don't get too excited. It won't be something super sexy, but there will be some elements that you can kind of compare different women. I think hopefully I can at least achieve that and show that, well, and just provide the first kind of resource of this kind so that if people are interested in early Tudor Queen's writing, they'll be able to access this themselves and do their own kinds of analysis and use it for their own kinds of whatever research interests they have. So I'll be drawing on the work of like Ruth and Sebastian, etc., but not replicating it.
No, fair enough. I mean, this sounds amazing. And I love the idea of providing this kind of scholarly resource. I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that I would love to point my own students on early modern queenship to. They would absolutely love this.
Exactly.
So it's fantastic.
I guess it's like the addition of Margaret Tudor's letters, but kind of a bit smaller and a bit more accessible, which will be great. It won't be as sophisticated as the addition, but it hopefully it'll be useful. And that's kind of what we want, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's all about kind of creating research that then gives other people a springboard to kind of keep going and taking it to the next level. So that's really, really wonderful. And I'm sure we're all going to be looking forward to that coming online. So fantastic. So I know it's early days. I know this is like, you know, we're on the kind of early side of the project, but how many letters are we talking about? I mean, I know that, you know, that there's a lot of Margaret's, but mm-hmm. I know, you know, are we talking about kind of tens of letters, hundreds of letters? I mean, how many are we talking about here?
Yeah, so it's a real mix. So if you include the full Margaret corpus in the numbers, I've found so far, so looking at vernacular correspondence, so things in English or Scots, kind of focusing on that to start with, there's about 330 letters that I've found so far of all these women. Margaret, as usual, swamps them. So there's about 230 from Margaret. What's been so interesting, actually, in kind of collating this information is it really highlights how incredibly prolific Margaret was. So there's a real range of the other women's letters. There's about 90 in total of the other eight women, and they really range in size. So for some people like Catherine Howard and Elizabeth of York, I've got kind of like one or two letters, whereas for other queens like Catherine Parr, Mary Tudor Brandon, you're getting up to kind of 26, 28 letters. So there's a real mix. So the intention is not to do the entirety of Margaret, and just to take a sample of about 30 letters that compare with the surviving archives that we have for the rest of the queens. So the total I'm envisaging will be about 125 letters, something like that, in total for the nine queens, kind of as representative a sample as I can manage. But it's interesting because what's interesting in itself is how varied the epistolary archives of all these women are. You know, someone like Catherine of Aragon, I think I've got 15 letters in English for her, whereas for someone like, I mean, Catherine Parr, 28 letters is really quite large, but they're really interesting because they show a really diverse range of different perspectives and positions that they're in. So we've got letters that in which Catherine of Aragon is performing the role of Queen Regent versus Queen Consort, and then we've also got positions in which, say, Margaret is Queen Dowager. So what's really interesting is in that sample we can not only look at individual variation across the nine queens, but we can also look at how different kinds of queenly roles are realised through letter writing. You can kind of have some kind of comparative analysis of that. And that's what I'm really interested in, is how can we advance our understanding of kind of the role of queen in this period through the analysis of their letters, and to what extent are different kinds of queenly role realised through letter writing? You know, are they all the same, or does kind of Margaret performing the role of Queen Regent affect her linguistically versus when she's Queen Dowager? And how does she do that differently to Catherine Parr versus Catherine of Aragon, etc.? So just kind of really bolstering our understanding of these different kinds of queenly role and the impact that they can have on kind of how they perform this role through letter writing, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kind of think about how they frame their authority, if they're a consort or a dowager or a regent. And and like you said, that would be so helpful to compare to all the work that's been done on the regnant queens, like Elizabeth, for example, or Mary Queen of Scots. So yeah, that's really exciting. I love that, because again, that, I think that's something that's often missed out, particularly dowagers and regents. Well, dowager, I'm very passionate about dowagers, obviously.
I worked
on Joan of Navarre, but I think that we often just don't appreciate the situation of dowager queens and how they have to kind of carve out new roles for themselves and kind of, you know, reframe their position and their authority. And looking at that linguistically, I think could be really, really exciting. So yeah, great.
And that's what I found with Margaret, actually, is the fact that when she's Queen Dowager, it's actually far more interesting how she performs the role, this kind of queenly role through letter writing. And then when she was Queen Consort, there's a far larger peak in her letter writing output. So that in itself is really interesting. And kind of another focus of it is to try and put together these women as a whole and compare them with Queen Regnants and kings as well, to see to what extent actually does the letter writing practices and linguistic and material practices of these kind of most authoritative and well-studied and iconic royal individuals, how does that differ to the Queen's consort, Queen's regent, Queen's dowager, etc.? Are there any differences? Because my hunch is that whilst we might understand these individuals as having very different kinds of levels of power and influence, actually, I wonder if that's necessarily represented linguistically and materially, and maybe these kinds of letters are actually very similar in terms of their form and function. And that's kind of one of the interesting questions I'm looking forward to kind of interrogating in it. You know, are kings and queens, well, non-regnant monarchs, how different are their letters, and are they really? And what does that tell us about the nature of these kinds of roles in the period? Can it kind of complicate or understand them and challenge them a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that's important, that we do need to challenge these understandings. And there is, you know, again, this is the joy of kind of comparative analysis, that by looking at these women in different situations and different roles and different backgrounds, etc., that we can get a much richer understanding and maybe, again, challenge some of the assumptions that's been made about particular women, especially women that we think we know. You know, I think that's the thing with the six wives, etc. We think we know them. And again, looking at them in a different way, we can say, well, hang on a minute. Maybe we don't know them as well as we think. Maybe there's an aspect that we really don't, you know, we've kind of taken for granted, or we've completely missed out because we've been focusing on another aspect of their life. Yeah. So no, I think this is really exciting in terms of, yeah, offering a whole new window on these women.
It's ambitious. I mean, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, ambition's a good thing. Definitely. So far, I mean, I know it's early days, but what's the most interesting letter you've found so far? Is there something that really kind of stands out as being like, I don't know, provocative or different, or that took you by surprise?
This is why I'm going to have to try not to choose a Margaret letter, aren't I?
Well, you can choose Margaret. I can appreciate, you know, you have a deep relationship with Margaret and her letters, so it's absolutely fine if it's one of hers.
I've not fully analysed more yet. I've just kind of collated the hand list, and that'll be the first start stage of the project, is to go and visit the archives and to see these manuscripts in person and start to analyse them after I've produced the transcriptions. I think one letter that I think is really interesting is that I've looked at in person is Catherine of Aragon's letter that she sends just after the Battle of Flodden in 1513. And she writes to Henry VIII, who's in France, saying, well, you know, we've been successful at the Battle of Flodden and the King of Scots is dead. Should I want to send his body to you, but all of the Englishmen were horrified, so I've just sent you his coat. And just kind of like really strange letters like that. That's one of my favourites, I think, because it's just really weird and you can't really imagine just sending your brother-in-law's body on a bow overseas. But kind of that's really interesting because she's performing the role of Queen Regent during that period, and it's, well, how does she perform this role and how does she kind of report on the success of this political effort, and how does, but how did she also kind of negotiate the personal relationships in that or not? And it's interesting how kind of the political and diplomatic wins are highlighted over any kind of personal negations and kind of an impact that that's had. So I'm interested in that letter in particular, especially because Catherine's writing in English. So it tells you a lot about how she's acquired English as a language, and it's interesting to see it. I'll be interested to see how her linguistic practices compare to people like Margaret or Anne Boleyn, for example, who are native English women.
Definitely.
You know, are her linguistic and kind of letter writing practices any different based on the fact that obviously she's from Aragon?
Absolutely. And I think that you're right. That's such an interesting kind of situation that she's in, right? Because there's the personal aspect. Like you said, it is her brother-in-law. Yeah. So there's that, as well as the kind of King of Scots, King of England kind of scenario. And there's also the kind of, I mean, how often is it the case that a queen and a king are engaged in two facets of war? So they're both doing campaign, like, you know, obviously she's fighting the Scots and he's fighting in France. And arguably her campaign is going better than his campaign. So there's an issue there. So she's like triumphant, but she's also like, you know, and she didn't want to kind of completely kind of emasculate him by being like, you know, I am victorious. And how are things going in France, by the way? So it's a really tricky situation to negotiate, in that, you know, and very unusual, you know, to have that kind of scenario. So I can completely appreciate why that particular letter and situation.
Still. One of my strange favourites. I was slightly horrified when I first read it. So intrigued to look at it a bit further. And it's a holograph letter as well. So the fact that she's written it herself, I always really enjoy letters that queens have penned in their own hand. I mean, they're especially fascinating.
Absolutely. And especially when, like you said, such a momentous letter. I mean, this isn't just like a how's it going kind of letter. This is particularly significant given the political context of Flodden and everything that's happening.
Yeah. And the fact that she chose to pen it in English as well, like, you know, she could have penned it in Latin or in French as well. It's just interesting, like, the linguistic choices involved. And it's just quite a fascinating letter. I'm interested to kind of really get stuck in with it and see how it compares with Catherine's wider practices as well.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, that choosing the vernacular letters is going to be interesting from that perspective, because obviously there is like a place for, you know, Latin and French and kind of diplomacy and more formal kind of context. Mm-hmm. But the holograph element, the vernacular element, and like you said, particularly when she's multilingual herself, all of those choices mean something. And that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, completely. And that's definitely been revealed through like my analysis of kind of studying Margaret's letters in terms of like kind of acquisition of Scots versus English and things, and the impact that has on how she tries to perform her kind of her identity as Queen of Scots, and the role that obviously this linguistic selection plays in how Catherine of Aragon is performing her role as Queen of England. You know, that's a really big deal, especially in this context. It'd be interesting to see the impact it would have had if she'd chosen to write in French. You know, that's a very different kind of ideological and national statement, isn't it? So that's kind of been something I'm interested in kind of unpicking a little bit further. But yeah, it's definitely my favourite. It's very weird.
Well, you're right. It's a thoroughly weird situation that she was navigating there.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, brilliant. Fascinating. Well, my last question is, obviously you've talked a bit about the website, the kind of resource that's going to be. That is super exciting. Again, that it's going to have those transcripts and hopefully images that we can work with. What else are you planning? What else do we have to look forward to? Is there going to be, you know, any kind of monograph or, you know, again, is there going to be like a series of journal articles or anything to kind of talk about what's come out of the project?
A few different things, hopefully. One of them I'm quite excited about is I'm hopefully going to have a podcast
Brilliant.
Entitled The Queen's Post. Hopefully there's some other kind of academic guests, and hopefully with some performances of different letters, so we can kind of unpick different Queen's letters and think about, you know, what we can understand from different disciplinary approaches to these women and their letter writing practices, so what that can tell us. So I'm quite excited about that. It shall be quite a new experience for me. As you could tell, I get a little bit nervous in podcasts. And I'm hoping that I'll really kind of engage wider audiences as well. And through, I'm hoping that we'll kind of perform some of the letters as well, so you'll be able to kind of get an idea of what these letters sounded like and kind of the real kind of verbal impact that they had, because a lot of these letters weren't read and privately, they were kind of performed out loud. And then there's the project website, and then there's going to be a couple of journal articles, I think, probably think about Queen's Messengers, because that's an area that's really not been researched very much. I'm interested in what kinds of individuals do Queens employ to deliver their letters, and through my analysis of Margaret's letters, it's really quite fascinating the kinds of individuals that they employ and draw on for different kinds of contexts and different kinds of letters. So Margaret's kind of most high-stakes correspondence, she sends her most trusted messengers. But they're not employed as messengers, they're employed of like her chaplain or the head of the wardrobe. So it's kind of interesting looking at what can that tell us, and what can the analysis of Queen's messengers tell us about our understanding of different servants in the employment of queens and kings, and the kind of multifaceted nature of their roles beyond those that are recorded in just the accounts. So there's going to be an article on that, and then there's also going to be a monograph.
Great.
I'm going big. So that's going to be the sort of full study of, based on the analysis that I've done, you know, what's the form, function and power of Queen's letter writing in this period. And then I'm sort of like thinking longer term beyond the 2 years, because I can't achieve everything. I'm thinking maybe to do some kind of edition, maybe a printed edition of these Queen's letters, kind of providing some kind of maybe slightly more public facing and accessible and engaging resource that kind of people, students and scholars can use, but perhaps wider public audiences might be interested in. So that's kind of a longer term plan, but just one edition at a time.
Absolutely. Well, you've got a lot of work ahead of you, but that's all really exciting. I love the idea of performing the letters and kind of being able to listen to the letters, because you're right. I think that's an aspect that is completely lost to us today, that we don't appreciate the ways in which, and I often have to say to my students, you know, they think of letters as being inherently private. And these women's letters were not. They were public. They were passed around. Like you said, they were performed. Yeah. And so that's a really exciting aspect. I'm so excited that you're doing that. And I love the messenger thing as well. Again, that's a key thing about the letters. I know there's been some work on the kind of physicality and letter locking and that kind of thing, but the messengers, the method of delivering it, is really important. I remember one of the most frustrating letters, holograph letters I ever read, was one from Anne of Brittany to Germaine de Foix, her niece, and she basically says, you know, oh, I hope you're well, etc. And Jacques is going to tell you all the good stuff, basically. And it's like, no, Jacques knows everything. It's not on the paper. So the messengers were really trusted with a lot of kind of the key juicy tidbits that you didn't maybe necessarily want to commit to paper. So knowing who these people were, their relationship to these women, that, again, that element of kind of trust to deliver these incredibly important missives, that's really exciting.
Yeah. And when do they employ like a formal herald versus kind of their chaplain? You know, what sort of situations in which do they employ those? And what does that tell us about what they're doing through the correspondence? Because Margaret uses her own private messengers for much of her letter writing. But then when she's reinstalled in the role of Queen Regent, she starts using official ambassadors. And that tells us a lot about the kind of political position and power that she's in at that time, and the impact that it has on the delivery of a correspondence, as well as kind of the impact it has on its linguistic and material design. I'm really excited, and hopefully there'll be these kind of the podcast and the performances will be hosted on the website as well, to make it like a really like dynamic and engaging experience. I'm hoping so, because we really forget that these letters, you can't just think about them as a text. You know, they're an object. They were carried by an individual. Their material composition tells us so much before you even get to the main text. So it's really important to kind of consider all of these different angles when you're trying to understand these letters. And that, yeah, that's kind of my hope.
Oh, no, that is, I mean, I'm so excited. We've got so much to look forward to. So thank you so much for telling us all about this project. Again, everybody keep your eyes out for the Queen's Post coming your way in various different formats. Yeah, so this is great. Lots to look forward to there. So Helen, I can't thank you enough for joining us today on the podcast, for telling us about your work on Margaret Tudor, on the Queen's Post. And again, lots of great output for us to look forward to on both fronts. And thank you so much for kind of telling us about this exciting new direction in Queenship Studies and Tudor Studies. This is so much coming our way in terms of resources that the field can build on and enhance our understanding of these women, of queenship, of linguistics. This is going to be a really, really great resource for the field, really filling a gap. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.